And probably a little bit of tea.
Did you do tea when I wasn't here? Did you see this in the Times today?
Oh.
Yeah, let me give you a shot.
No, it's fabulous. Hello.
I'll give it to you after.
Oh, well, thank you.
Just 5 minutes.
Hi, everybody. Oh, on this beautiful spring evening, getting closer to winter. My name is Sandra Weinberg.
I'm Angela Dews.
And that's the Buddha. And this is the Buddha and Bill W. Is there anybody here for the first time? Oh, welcome. You want to just take a second and tell us what brought you here? Usually it's a friend, but...
My name is Dan. I've heard about this for a long time. And instead of going to Chelsea Riverside on Monday night, I came here.
Great. My whole group.
I hope we'll see you again next month. And who else had their hands up? Yes.
My name's Rose, and I've been to a program here last year, but I've never been to this meeting, so...
Okay. And by the way, I'm glad you said something about that, because we don't call it a meeting. Yes, we're meeting, obviously, but we don't call it a meeting. We call it a sitting. So it's just using different terminology. And it has sometimes a little different flavor than a meeting as well. But we are meeting, so. And who else? Yes. Curiosity. Okay, that's good.
It's a fine thing.
What?
It's a fine thing, curiosity.
Yes?
I am Amchitjan. I was invited by two very good friends, and he was kind.
Nice.
Great. Great. Well, I like the idea of staying open and curious. This may not be what...
Did you have your hand up?
You pointing to somebody?
He had his hand up.
I'm sorry, yes.
Hi. So I signed up for the e-newsletter, and I saw the Bill W. thing and jumped right out of it.
Marvelous. It's interesting as we go through this to see there are so many ways that what Bill Wilson was teaching sort of just goes hand in hand a lot with what the Buddha was teaching. In particular, do no harm, right? And certainly I know for myself, with addiction, no matter how much I wanted to be a nice person, a good person, and a kind person, as I got more and more of the alcohol and other stuff inside me, that desire to be a certain way got taken over. And so to be able to come back to living a kind life without having to worry about where's the alcohol, who's going to see that I'm drinking it, et cetera, et cetera. It's such a freedom. So those of us who have moved away from a particular addiction also know what freedom can taste like. And I found for myself in Alaska, Angela, as I got more immersed in the Buddha's teachings, I think it's 30-some-odd years now, I began to understand freedom in a much deeper way. It wasn't just freedom to have everything I want, but freedom to be content with what I had. That was enormous for me. Enormous for me. And the 11th step really was very helpful. As I would quiet down and meditate and start to see some of what's really there, not just what was going blah, blah, blah up here. So what we're going to do, and you stop me at any time to tell me if I'm off track.
Yeah, but don't they do the meet and greet?
See, I'm glad I said. So we're going to take a couple of minutes just to, you know, turn around, see who's here, say hello. So you start to get to know some of the people here. So let's just take 5 minutes and you can just schmooze a little bit with
people. Say hi until you hear the bell.
Always feel free to nicely interrupt me if I forget something.
That was the only thing. I can do the Donna talk if you want me to. And I'll do it. You might as well do it early.
I'm going to do it as the
And then you have a Saturday, this Saturday, are you having a day of silence? It says it's Saturday the 12th. That might be the 11th.
Sunday.
Oh, Sunday the 12th.
I think it's Sunday.
It's written down wrong.
Yeah, I think it's Sunday. Is it written down wrong?
Day of silence, Saturday, October 12th. It's Sunday, October 12th. So I'll say that.
Don't believe everything you read, right?
That's enough?
No.
Bring him back.
Okay.
Were you 2 weeks in the Forest Refuge?
I was at IMS.
You were at the Forest Refuge?
Right near the Forest Refuge. Were you there?
No, but I'm going in February, but I wanted to
stop. Oh, I'm going in December.
Fabulous.
So we have some announcements and some talking and some other things to do, but people come here to meditate, to sit, and I'm going to lead the meditation. Are there people here who have not meditated before? Are there anybody here who doesn't have a personal practice or feels like? So I'll do a lead, but and maybe come back in a few times, but I think it's really important, even as you're learning what meditation is, to inhabit the silence, to really feel the flavor of the silence. I love this story. One of the teachers suggested when they started this joint, let's make it soundproof. So besides the fact that it's impossible, it defeats the purpose. The purpose is to find a quiet, sacred place in a crazy world, you know. So that's what we're gonna do. And the aspiration is not to have a mind with no thoughts, good luck with that, but to notice what happens. And I'm going to use the body as the object of meditation. So first thing to do is get comfy. And if you're sitting on a chair, have your feet on the floor, or if you're going to put them around you, just try not to have them so that you put a lot of your body weight on them. They're going to go to sleep otherwise. If you're on a cushion, it's really good if you can put your knees on the zabutan, which means you scoot forward a little bit sometimes, and then cross your feet. Yeah, see if that works for you. If not, adjust yourself. And if you're on a chair, it's best not to lean back against the back, but to give yourself the upright position, which allows your breath to flow in and out in a much easier way. If you have pain or somewhere along the line, you say, okay, you can lean back against the chair, but see if you can start as if you were on a cushion, as if you were holding your body straight. You can put your hands in your lap or on your legs, whatever's comfortable for you, facing up or facing down. Folks have all kinds of things they do with their hands. But make sure they're comfortable. We're going to sit for 20 minutes. Does that make right? Which isn't very long, really. It always feels like you want to sit a little longer. And I'll probably let you know when half of it's done, just so you'll know. You can close your eyes or look down right in front of you, whichever you prefer. The notion is not to have your eyes all over the place. What you're doing is stilling, calming. I invite you to allow yourself to find your position, to find your seat. You might even scoot a little bit so you can feel your behind on the chair or the cushion. And that is one of your objects of meditation. So the breath is often an object of meditation, but sometimes for me it gets a little light. And my behind on the chair is like a good anchor, and I can come back to that. So feel your behind on the chair. And feel your breath. I invite you to take a breath all the way in and feel the lightness of the breath entering your body and traveling into your body, and then the release of your breath, all of the breath out, and the settling and calming that the release can give you. So I invite you to breathe in all the way in and out all the way out. The deal is just to remember, just to know that you're breathing. You know how to breathe. You do it without a thought. Now give us a thought to start with, and then we're going to release the thought and just ride the breath. See if you can feel it without thinking about it. Entering the nose, the upper part of the lip, and traveling down into your body. Let's let it go down to your belly, rising and falling like a ball, maybe a beach ball. In, big round belly, out, all the way out. And all the way down, you might feel it in your chest, wherever you feel the breath. Now allow that breath to travel up from the seat and the belly up your back, a bone at a time, slowly, noticing all the places on your back that you're traveling across. If there's tension, you can notice the tension, breathing, breathing, noticing. Not with the intention to make it go away. It might, but not with that intention. Just to note it with tenderness. Ah, a little tightness. And then move on. When you get to your shoulders, relax those shoulders. Drop them down from your ears. So you're still dignified, but not slumped. Relax your neck. Relax your jaw. And as I said, your body is your object of meditation. So the sensory objects are the doors by which this moment of experience is landing on your body. So the first one might be the ears. You might be hearing. That's a sound landing on your ear door. And it comes and it lands and you let it go. And you might be aware of the absence of sound. Try not to rush out to meet it and name it something. Just feel, see if you can feel it just land on your ear. Be aware of the body sitting. Another sense object, sense door is the skin or the touching. Notice your lips touching, your eyelids touching. Maybe there's a breeze on your skin. Maybe you feel the clothes on your skin. You're inhabiting your body. And lastly, your mind. In Buddhism, your mind heart is the sixth sense door. I love that. That means thoughts and emotions are like silent sounds landing. Sometimes we think we make them up, but imagine them landing on your mind or your heart. And like a sound, if you don't grab onto it, it'll leave. And you might even notice for a moment the absence of thought. If you notice that your mind is in the past or the future, the noticing is the awareness. Once you notice that, you can celebrate that moment. That's mindfulness. Bring it back to the present. It's like this. It's like this. If there's a persistent thought that keeps coming, sometimes you can say, thank you, not now. Not now. Not mad, just tender. Not now. The last 5 minutes, notice, I invite you to be aware of what's going on. Maybe if it's sleepiness or doubt or restlessness, it's what we have. It's common, There's a name for it. It's hindrances. We all have it. So you don't pretend like it's not happening. You notice it. You're aware of it. Whatever's going on in this moment on this seat. Ah, sleepiness. Without making up stories about it, just notice it, be aware of it. And then come back to the body sitting, to the breath in and out. Be aware, it's like this.
So we'll have a 5-minute stretch. Is there anybody here who's a yoga teacher or would like to lead a stretch? Anybody? Yes? No?
Your hands up? Good.
Thank you. About 5 minutes, okay? Thank you.
The sit was with them. Any questions you might have? Any experiences you want to share about the meditation? Anything you'd like to do differently? Anything you might want to tell me for the next time? That means you're all very satisfied, or you're all just like tired. Well, while we're waiting, I could give you some announcements. This Sat Center is very often Buddhism is seen as and experienced as a very personal, intimate, sort of silo experience. That's the way I learned it. New York Insight Meditation Center is very much about building community as well. It's a Buddhist center. You get to meditate. You get to go in. But you also get to meet some other folks who are meditating. In Buddhism, there are three refuges. The Buddha, which is a person who found enlightenment and our own ability to be free. The Dharma, which is his teachings, which is, they teach a lot of classes here. And the last and really important is the Sangha, which is our other people who are practicing with you. So in that regard, there's a potluck on Friday here. So you can bring yourself a little dish and meet some people. It's really fun. And the other thing we're having, Sandra's doing a day of silence. Is that Sunday? It says Saturday the 12th. So Saturday is actually the 11th. So maybe it's Sunday, Dalila. Is Sunday?
I'm going to be here Sunday.
So Sunday, Sandra will be here no matter what else is going on. One of the things that's really powerful about this practice is the ability to practice a little longer. So that 20 minutes was kind of okay. But the ability to continue that on a daily basis and to find moments when you can actually put some time together is really amazing to see what's really going on, to see how, I keep saying, it's like this, it's like this. So on the day of silence, you get to sit, and you get to walk, and you have a day of silence with Sandra. It's lovely. So if you haven't sat before, if you haven't done a retreat before, it's a really good beginning of that experience. And if you have, it's a really nice way to do it locally. You get on the train or the bus or however you get there on your bike, and you come here. You don't have to pack a bag. So I suggest if you're free, come have some food on Saturday and or come to the Day of Silence on Sunday. And the way we do that is, I just have to say quickly, this is done by Donna, which is contributions. The teachers don't get paid, but we pay rent. And unlike a meeting, we're self-sufficient through our own contributions, but it's a little more than a meeting. We don't meet, it's not sort of a sit and run. This is an ongoing operation. So even though I might not come to the Day of Silence or the potluck, in order for it to stay open so all of us can come, I give as much as I can. You can do that as a member, which is really cool. As a member, you get first dibs on important, really, like when really great teachers are coming or some event is coming that sells out, you get first dibs. I think you get 20% off or you get something off all your classes. And that's what keeps this place running. Right now, it doesn't. Right now, we have a lot of people who come, who drop in. But if you want to be a member, get one of these. If you want to know what's going on, get one of these. And yeah, is that it? Did I forget anything? There's a basket in the back called a Donna basket. It's got a suggested donation on it. But again, you give what you feel it's worth. And I always give a little bit more than I feel like I can give because it's really important for me to open my heart. The generosity is the first thing the Buddha taught. And I tell this story, and I apologize to you all who have heard it before because I tell it all the time. I went to Vietnam with Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Zen monk, and we went to Hue, I think it was Hue, and they hadn't had an alms round since what they call the American War. And what an alms round is, the Buddha made the monks and nuns dependent on the community where they lived, so they can't keep food overnight and they can't hold money. So every day they go out with empty bowls to get something from the community. And they hadn't done that in 40 years or something. So they were up all night rolling sticky leaves and sticky rice and banana leaves. And the people lifted their children and they dropped the food into the monks and nuns' bowls. So the first thing those children learn is generosity. They learn to sit later. They learn all this other stuff later. But the first thing they learn is generosity. So with that in mind, this particular insight meditation tries to give these teachings as freely as possible so we don't charge. But you can give if you like in the basket back there. And there's Sandra. I'm done. Perfect timing.
Thank you. And this will be a drum roll as I make these mentions. Thank you.
When you were talking about the alms rounds, I remember in Vietnam the joy on the people's faces as they gave. It wasn't just drop it in the bucket. They were just so thrilled to be a part of that. And that is such a beautiful gift of generosity when we can come from our heart. I try to remember that, and I don't do it all the time, when I'm writing out checks to different organizations. There's a big difference between writing it. I mean, it's good to write a check no matter what, but a difference between that and taking the time to think about what is this organization doing? Who is going to benefit? Then when I write the check, I usually write it for a little more than I had thought I would. It's interesting how that goes. So, step 11. Actually, what drew me to program after a psychiatrist suggested I come here, and I looked at the steps and I thought, oh, meditation, that sounds cool. And so that's what started me. And although it was told to me to please go to meetings of step one, I kept looking for step 11 and 12. I was also looking for a guy, but I thought... And look what I found, oh my God. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand it, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And as I just look down at the paper, I see my eyes have changed since this morning. So we'll see what happens here. Kevin Griffin, anybody here know Kevin Griffin? Yeah, he's a great friend and colleague, and he's the author of a wonderful book called One Breath at a Time, Buddhism and the 12 Steps. I think that was one of the first books on Buddhism and the 12 Steps. So let me just read what he says. Step 11 leads us directly into the fullness of spiritual life. It shows a direct line between our spiritual practices and our connection with ultimate truth. Once we have weathered the storms of inventory and amends, this step leads us to a safe harbor where we can begin to live the promises of peace and serenity. While step 10 helps us maintain our sobriety through inventory, step 11 may be even more important in our spiritual maintenance. And if you look at your life and all the different aspects of it, no matter how much work you put into something, if you don't do something about the maintenance, it goes downhill. And so it's so important. Just say very briefly, I know that so many people have questions about the role of God, whether you have it the lowercase g or a capital case G, how to work the program if you don't believe in God. This is a question that came up for me when I first came into program and comes up for a lot of people. And then the question, like, what is God? What is a God? What, you know, all of that. And I found everything got so much looser for me as I realized I don't have to know particularly what it is. It's a pointer. It's not a noun. How could one even take the whole thing of God and put it in a noun? You know? So it's a pointer, and it's pointing to something outside of our self-centered ego. Just out there. There's something so freeing about that. So freeing about that. It's so much larger than our thoughts about how we're going to control this and we're going to control that. What is it they say, man plans, God laughs, something like that? Yeah, I think many of us have experienced that in our lives. It's also much larger than our view of others. We make up ideas about other people, and then we believe those ideas. It's like sticking people in a casket while they're still alive. I just came back from 2 weeks on a retreat, and there are about 100 of us sitting in silence, eating in silence, walking in silence, and everybody has a story, but somehow the stories didn't get in the way of people coming together to cut vegetables, people walking, people... Everything just went beautifully. Nobody knows what... I mean, the teachers know, because they ask what's going on in people's minds. I'm sure there's a lot of judging. Oh, I don't like that person's shoes. Why is that person that? That person breathes too loud. You know? And after a while, it's like, oh, so what? To just be here. Just be here. So for tonight, for any of you who are still wrestling with the idea, the concept of who is God, what is God, I invite you to think of it as truth with a capital T. A truth beyond the kinds of truths that we even know. Things as they are. Things as they are. Actually, the Buddha did not address questions about is there a God, is there not a God. When those questions came up, he just didn't go there. He was interested more in what is the actual experience? What is coming up for you? And what is that creating in you that leads you to act in a certain way? What is it that you need to shift in your way of thinking and being to become free of attachment? Attachment. We get attached to so many things. The word mine. I, me, mine. Just for tomorrow, take an hour and see if you can go for a whole hour without using I, me, mine. Just what it would be like without that pronoun. So when he talked about addiction, I mean, we talked about attachment. We're really talking so much for people like us who have a particular virulent form of attachment, whatever our drug or behavior of choice, but how to let go of that attachment? How to let go of that clinging? How do we deal with the anger, the aversion? Where do we get stuck in delusion? These are all big questions that can guide us towards a happier life. To actually develop a sense of clarity about the reality of the process of life. And in order to do that, we have to let go of some of our notions of how it's supposed to be. Let go into how it is. And if you are here and you do have an abiding sense of belief in the mystery of God, beautiful. Be grateful for whatever that is, for whatever that is. In the 12 and 12 it says, when we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our mind, our emotions, and our institutions of vitally needed support. Wow. Makes it sound really important, doesn't it? And yet we can just say, oh, it's 11 steps, let me go on to 12. No. We likewise deprive our mind, emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. So again, this step conveys our intention to be open, to stay open, or if we close, to pry it back open, beyond our small egoic minds, beyond Sandra Weinberg. When I can let go of Sandra Weinberg, when I can get out of that coffin, wow, what a life there is out there. It's quite amazing. To let go of this intense burden of self-centeredness. I see the kids walking around, you know, in school, and their backpacks, looks like they're carrying 100 pounds. Everything that's in there, I don't know how they find anything in those backpacks. They go, they manage to scroll into the whole thing and come up with a piece of gum. I don't know how they do that. But what a relief it must be to take that off the back. Anybody here use backpacks? I don't use anymore. I'm hanging off one shoulder. But right, it's such a relief. They're like, ah. So, how nice it would be to let go of the backpack filled with I, me, and mine. So through prayer and meditation, we increase our conscious contact. These are powerful words. The more conscious we are, the more we can see what's skillful and what's not skillful. If we're not conscious, we're just going to act out habitually. So I'm sure, I suspect everybody here has at some point at night, some point in their lives gone, why did I do that? That was a terrible thing. Why did I do that? But we don't have to wait till at night to go, why did I do that? We can go beforehand, do I want to do that? Or even the question, what am I wanting? And much of the time what we're wanting is a pat on our little egoic backs. It's okay, honey, you're great. Oh, that was fabulous, yeah. Most of the time. But it's good to check in and see. And the more conscious we are, conscious, the more we can see what's skillful and not skillful. And make a decision then. One of the places where this is really important, and it's the least, it's the most difficult one to stay with, is before you speak. Before you speak. I think sometimes of a fisherman, you know, when they're reeling in the fish, sometimes as just as my words are going out, I wish I had a fishing pole so I could reel it back in. Anybody ever? Being more conscious. Tartang Tulku, a Tibetan master, he put it very, very well. By means of meditation, we can teach our minds to be calm and balanced. Within this calmness is a richness and a potential. Excuse me. An inner knowledge which can render our lives boundlessly satisfying and meaningful. Boundlessly satisfying. Do you know how much you have to shop in order to get a little bit of satisfying? How much you have to eat of a nice meal in order to feel a little bit satisfied? Now he's talking about boundlessly satisfying. While the mind may be what traps us in unhealthy patterns of stress and imbalance, it's also the mind which can free us. Through meditation, we can tap the healing qualities of mind. So we got what we need up here. We just have to work it, perhaps a little more skillfully. The word courageous comes to me a great deal. We learn a courageous allowing of things to be the way they are. It's like settling back and going, okay, this is what's happening right now. And to see it, not just through the lens of, okay, I'm okay with this. Yuck, I'm not okay with that. I believe this, it should be that. No. Just before we go and take any action, what is happening? What is there here for us to work with? There's always something to work with. And whatever is happening in your life or my life right now, some of it's good, some of it is not good, some of it really sucks, right? It is the gateway to freedom. It doesn't have a big sign on it that says, enter here, I'm a gateway to freedom. A lot of times it's like, run, get out of here. But if we can hang in, if we can stay, we can check in with ourselves. That is the gateway. And again, sometimes it comes in the disguise of pain or disease, disappointment for sure. But no matter what it is, always we have the opportunity, if we're willing and courageous enough to take it, to open to it, to open beyond it to our true nature, underneath all the conditioning. We think we have free will. So much of what I think I'm doing because, I have free will, I'm so conditioned. And to me, the longer I live, the more conditioned I am. Kids are marvelous, right? Because they bop out and they do so many different outrageous things because they don't know yet. Get back into the... Yeah. So prayer. Prayer has many, many facets. And there's a mystery in the power of prayer. And to offering prayer and mindful prayer. It's not about getting what we want. It's not about saying, dear God, here's my list. When I wake up tomorrow, I'd like to have 5 or 6 of these things taken care of. It doesn't work like that. It's about coming in terms and touch with our own intentions, coming in touch with our own aspirations, our heart. It's about connecting with our deeper feelings. This is where prayer can be beautiful. I'd like to just a beautiful example of prayer by Tagore, an Indian poet, author. He was also deeply influenced by the Buddhist teachings. Okay. This is what he said about prayer. Let us not pray to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in facing them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it. Let me not look for allies in life's battlefield, but to my own strength. Let me not crave an anxious fear to be saved, but hope for patience to win my freedom. For myself. Let me not crave an anxious fear to be saved, but hope for patience to win my freedom. Grant me that I may not be a coward, feeling your mercy in my success alone, but let me find the grasp of your hand in my failure. There's a wonderful expression of this also in the 12 and 12. He says, we discover that we do receive guidance for our lives to just about the extent that we stop making demands upon God to give it to us on order and on our terms. Bill W. said, I was to sit quietly, when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my requests bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive. He was quite a guy, Bill. Actually, I'd like to see that movie again, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. Maybe we can get a copy of it and show it here. Would anybody like to see? Have everybody seen that, Bill W., that film? Anybody see it?
Yes.
Would you see it again if we had it here?
Yes.
Yeah, it was really inspiring. Let's look into that. So in the Pali language, vipassana, the word vipassana, means insight. And insight means to see clearly. And this, here we practice vipassana meditation. Without clear seeing, how are we to know what is real and what is true? Without clear seeing. A number of years ago, I was on retreat at IMS. I just came back from being 2 weeks there. And I went out for a walk, and I guess I wasn't paying good enough attention. If you're in New York, walking in New York, you have to pay attention to the roads. Next thing you know, one moment I'm walking, one moment I'm down, and I broke my elbow. We have to pay attention. Doesn't mean we're going to break parts of our bodies, but we might break parts of our spirit. We may break parts of the spirit of other people if we're not paying attention. And it's funny now, I just came back from IMS for a couple of weeks, and now when I go out for a walk, the people in the office, okay, careful, Sandra. Yeah. So let's focus a little bit on the idea of conscious contact. When we're not in the claws of our grasping egos, that's what they do, these egos, we can feel a spacious sense of peace when it's not there. An essential quality of meditation is to quiet the mind, activate and cultivate awareness as best we can, so that we can be with what is. It's also about being able to sit without all the answers. And our society doesn't like that. Our society wants boom, 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 boom. How do we sit without all the answers? Realizing that we are not all-knowing. Not all-knowing. Even though that can be uncomfortable. Sometimes it can feel like a put-down when we don't know all the answers to something and somebody else does. And my God, they're going to think they're better than me, etc., etc. All this comparing mind. So meditation, if we give ourselves to it, can train us to let go of any judging. You know, because, you know, when you notice the judging mind, you come back to maybe the breath. We can start to let go of defining things. We can start to let go, hopefully, telling stories about everything. I love stories. Narratives are marvelous, and there's a lot of teaching that comes with that. But depending on the kind of stories we're telling, it can be very destructive. I'm just wondering, anybody here never tell one destructive story about themselves? I don't know what we get from putting ourselves down in story form as much as we do. If nothing else, meditation gives us a moment, if we're willing to take it, to stop the frenzy of self-seeking. Once I'm sitting on the cushion, even if I'm with 100 people, and I get into a meditation mode, I'm not comparing my socks with somebody else's socks or how much food somebody has on their plate compared to how much I have on my plate, or that person's wearing the same thing every day, I took too many clothes, I didn't take enough clothes. And when all of that stops, oh, it's kind of like, have you been looking at the sky these past 2 days? See, yesterday the sky was like unreal. It's like, who can make something like that? But the mind can get free like that also. It can. I like what Adyashanti said. The door to God is the insecurity of not knowing anything. Bear the grace of that insecurity, and all wisdom will be yours. Open to the grace of insecurity, and all of it is there. Instead of trying to have all the answers, Bhante Gunarantana, marvelous teacher. Vipassana helps you see things as they really are, not as they appear to be. Bless you, everybody. Bless you. Things appear to be permanent, desirable, and substantial, but actually they are not. When you practice Vipassana meditation, you'll see for yourself the arising and disappearing of mental and physical phenomena, and you'll have a clearer comprehension of what is going on in your body and mind. You'll be able to accept things as they come to you with less agitation and deal with situations in a more positive way. But first, you will have to enter the zoo of your mind. And little by little, the animals get more friendly as you calm down. So this Vipassana is a way of self-transformation through self-observation. And it focuses on the deep interconnection between mind and body. You know, we take our minds to one kind of doctor, we take different parts of our body to different doctors. It's one flow here. And we lose track of that. I think I'm talking too much, right? Are you ready?
No.
Well, through prayer and meditation, we increase our conscious contact. The more conscious we are, the more we can see what's skillful and not skillful, and the more we can understand the impact of our words, thoughts, and actions. The truth is, our words, actions, and our thoughts have an impact on people, even though we think they're hidden. They're not. We learn this courageous allowing of things to be as they are, seeing them through the lens of this is what it is, and not through the lens of I'm okay with this, I'm not okay with that, I believe in this, I gotta change that. No, just here's what it is. And whatever is here, this is ours to work with. I know I said that before. But it's all too easy to say, no, I don't want to work with that right now, I want to work with that. I'll take away that, that's blah, 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 I'll go there. No. Whatever is here is the gateway to freedom. That's the most important thing to remember. Whatever is here is the gateway. Very often the lessons that we are being given can feel quite harsh, and the road can feel quite bumpy, but it's all manageable if you just open to it. Conscious contact is not only with ourselves and with our image of ourselves, but how about conscious contact with our actual behavior? Seeing what would be the effect on other people. And you can take a simple thing like being on a subway, watching the behavior. Do you push everybody out of the way to get the one seat? And maybe knock over the lady on a cane? simple things, just to watch. Conscious contact, and this is the big one, is being willing to not have all the answers. Not trying to control this mystery. Letting go of this suffocating, continuous reference to me. On retreat, so you have 100 people, and they're all going to do walking meditation, they're all going to do the housework, you know, and they're all going to stand in line to eat. And somehow it happens seamlessly. Now, inside people's minds, why does that lady get a little faster? Why why is she walking so slow? I got to get out of here. But it works. I have a feeling it wouldn't work so well if everybody was talking. Not at all. We are so quick to jump to conclusions and judgments without fully taking in the whole picture. Meditation, again, helps us to stop and to see, and then helps us to learn to cultivate non-judgmental awareness. So even noticing when you're judging, I did while I was on the retreat, and sometimes I do it during the day when I'm out walking here in the city, I start noticing when I'm judging, and judging comes up in so many ways, big ways, small ways, absurd ways. And so one day on the retreat, I just was saying, every time I noticed I was judging, I would just say, judging, judging, judging. It got so boring, judging, 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 judging. There was no end to what you can judge once your mind goes there. Judging self, judging the other. Watch it. I mean, even if you take a half hour just to watch, what do you get from it? What do you get? When we move to conscious contact with outside of the small I, me, we realize that in so many ways we're different, but ultimately we're profoundly alike. So maybe sometimes if you're caught in a judging thing, if indeed that happened, instead of going to what's different, just go and think, okay, what do he and she have in common? What do we have in common? What are some things that we share? Sometimes, like on a subway or a bus, one thing I know a number of us share is we all want to sit down. But once I can say to myself, I know I'm sharing this, we all want to sit, it's not just me, I got to get the seat. Although I will say, one good thing about getting old, a lot of times I get a seat. I used to be very hurt. I used to be, no, don't give me a seat. Now I go, thank you. Yeah. So when we move to conscious contact with people outside of this I, me, small world, we see we're alike. We all want to be happy. We don't want to feel pain. Once you really take this in, even if it's not fully involved in here, but take it in this way, a little bit of compassion just naturally starts to grow. You want a seat, I want a seat, aw. I feel compassion for your standing. I know what it's like. That's a small one, right? And that self-centeredness can start to slip away. What a relief. To be fully connected with what we're experiencing, both inwardly and outwardly, there is this knowing that even though we seem separate, we're all part of this one, interrelated and interdependent. There is no way that we're not interrelated and interdependent. So I'll just close with a quote from the 12 and 12. When we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our mind, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. Thank you for listening.
I don't know what to say. I'm glad the 11th step is where it is in the list of steps, because if I sat without having taken care of some of my business, reconnected with some of my relationships, become aware and willing to change some of my habits, it would be really hard to sit still. And watch what comes up, the monkey mind or what are you, the zoo that comes up. It's still hard, but it's that thing about being a horse thief, you know, it'd be really hard to sit on the cushion. But the thing that came to me, and I had a lot of thoughts, and they're all gone, of course, but one of them was that both Bill W. and the Buddha said, don't do it because I say so or because somebody tells you to do it. Try it out and see what happens. See if it makes a difference. And both of them say that. And for me, I've changed. You know, in 34 years, I've changed. So being sober has changed. Well, yeah, I've changed in 34 years. And I've changed in whatever the years I've been in meditating, because it's a natural thing. But it's also very profound in that I'm watching, when I can sit still, I can watch what arises and whether it's skillful or unskillful. I did something the other day and I immediately, like you said, that wanted to reel it back. And instead of reeling it back, I could make an amends. And then I was trying to make an amends, but she ran out, so I never got a chance to. So I just had to make sure the next time with the next person that came up, I would pause before I spoke. That was the best I could do. And if I see her again, I'll apologize. But, you know, just the process of how to become a more loving, a more, you know, a person the person that I want to be. And I, too, was on retreat. And the thing I had to keep telling myself was ill will. You've heard that story. I was it was unbelievable how bad I could feel when I don't talk. People weren't even talking, and I had such a bad attitude about them. I was a bad attitude about their shoes and their hats and how much food they were eating, all those things you said. And I hated myself for it. It wasn't that I hated them. I hated myself for it. And last week I went through a really sort of rocky place. And what I used to do when I first started meditating was I would try to calm down before I hit the cushion. I was like, I'm not taking this crap to the cushion. This is too scary and too ugly and too nasty. And now I roll out of bed and I take it to the cushion. And I sat there and realized that it's not me. It's not personal. It's like, this feeling of doubt, this feeling of not good enough, all that stuff that I often thought was who I was just something that was passing through. I love this Sandra. Sharon Salzberg says, you can let these feelings in and give them a cup of tea, but don't let them bring any luggage because they can't stay. They're not who you are. You've heard this too. I'm sorry, people who have heard this, but I teach kids, adolescents in a detention center. And one of the kids said, you know, oh, miss, I never knew. I'm not my thoughts. And I like, when he said it, I knew it, but when he said it, I was like, oh, I'm not my thoughts either. You know, I leak. I need to hear this stuff on a regular basis. I have to sit on a regular basis. And what the Buddha and Bill W. both told me to do was try it out and see what happened. And what's happened is, in some ways, you know, when I first put the drink down, I wanted to be a different person. It was like, okay, I was that person. Now I'm not drinking. I'm going to be a whole new person. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to be a great person. I'm going to be a whole better person. It didn't happen, of course. I was me, sober. It was so scary and so disappointing. And I had to learn how to be okay with that. And this practice has helped me. The 12 steps has helped me enormously. And I think the 10th and 11th step go together for me. Because I can't just write down what happened. I need to talk to somebody about it. I need to have a place to share it. And when the 10th step shows me the habit patterns that are coming up, the 11th step allows me to look at them and bring them to meditation. And I don't pray in the way that that I think of prayer, or I thought of prayer as a young person. But I do have a prayer where I wish everyone happiness. It's like it's not exactly a prayer. It's a sending out of a ripple of kindness. You know, may you be happy. Just like me, you want to be happy. And I want you to be happy not because you deserve it, because I need to want you to be happy. You know what I mean? It's not even, you don't have to be better, a different person for me to wish that for you. Happiness, compassion, happiness for your good fortune, equanimity. Those are things that I need to do. And the target that I'm giving them to don't have to deserve it. But if it's the person next to me that I have an attitude about at work, it's the muscle. It's like being at the gym. If I can send some compassion to that person, as you said, figure out the thing that I can bear, that unbearable person, it allows me to soften and to change. And the other thing about prayer, somebody interviewed Mother Teresa, and they asked her what she says to God when she prays to him. She said, "I don't say anything, I just listen." And so they say, "Well, what does God say back to you?" She said, "He doesn't say anything, he just listens." Which is prayer and meditation in the most gorgeous way, you know, and I feel like that myself. And if Mother Teresa can say it without mentioning who God is, I certainly can. Mm-hmm. But if I do it, if I don't do it, I feel the loss. If I don't get, you know, I stop going to meetings on a regular basis. I go once a week, you know, twice a month. And I was getting really strange. I didn't want to drink yet, but I was getting really strange. And I took a commitment for a step meeting. And it's changed my life. Duh. I suggest you all go to meetings. It changed my life. I had to find speakers. My people that I got sober with were telling me no. I thought it'd be simple. I just call my friends and say, I'm doing a meeting. Come over and speak to me. Speak for me. They're like, "I'm going kayaking. I don't have time to speak to you." So I had to go to meetings and find speakers. And I went to meetings, and it was fabulous. The same with meditation. If I don't meditate, I'm very impatient. I'm very hard on myself. I talk too fast. I'm too big. I take up too much space. All those things are just who I am. And if I meditate, I'm much more self-accepting, much more self-aware, and then much more self-accepting. And that allows me to be aware and accept other people. So I'm not going to go on and on, but it's changed my life. And you don't have to do it because I said so, but I would suggest, I invite you to try it if you haven't. And if you do it a little bit, it's like that thing. If you do a little bit, you get a little better. If you do it a lot, you get a lot better. And if you do it all the time, you get all the time better. It's lovely. So I suggest it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going back and forth. What if you break into groups of four? Nobody can leave because we're going to lock the doors. And then each person can just have a few minutes to share their own experience with prayer and meditation. And then we'll come back and share. Is that all right? Okay?
How many minutes each?
Each person will share maybe 4 minutes. Each person will share about 4 minutes. All right?
And when you're sharing, you should have the... deep listening is what the other three people are going to be doing instead of interrupting you or saying, "Yeah, I know what you mean. I had that happen to me." Try to listen without talking back. And we'll give you another 4 minutes at the end for a discussion.
So once you get together, figure out who's going to go first. And then every 4 minutes, we'll strike the gong so you'll know. Okay? Does everybody have partners? Anybody missing a partner? You're missing two. Are there any two extra people anywhere? Do you want to? I don't want. What?
I can make it three.
Okay.
I'll make it three. Can you keep track?
I'll keep track. Okay. Do we have one more person? Is there an extra person? They have three now. Okay. Okay. So just decide who's going to go first. And then I'll strike the gong and the first person will go. Take a moment to thank each other for sharing and for listening. we don't often get listened to very carefully. And now when you come back, let's be back in some kind of a circle so that we can see each other and share with each other. Thank you. I will always make sure that there's a space for you.
If you feel like it.
Is there any way we can do it so we can all sort of see each other? Or can we come around here and... have an opportunity now to anybody just want to share what tonight has been like for them? Any thoughts, feelings come up? Yeah, and we have a mic actually.
Good evening, everyone.
Is it on?
I'll try to speak up.
Hi. No, wait, is it on?
Is it working? Okay.
Like an ice cream cone close to your mouth.
Testing.
As I was sharing, hi, Amy. I'm an alcoholic.
Try it again. I think it might work.
Okay.
And by the way, when you introduce yourself, you don't have to say you're this or that. We're just, you can say your name so we get to know each other.
I'm a Buddhist alcoholic.
Hello. Testing. Testing.
As I shared with my group today, I was having a tough day. Self-doubt and not paying attention.
Thanks, Dalila.
And in my head and making mistakes at work. And I feel like 180% better, degrees better. Having come here, did a little meditation. I can always rely on meditation and sanghas and meetings, and I feel so grateful to have those, you know, because it's a gift and prayer. They're just healthy ways to get out of myself, get out of my head, ground myself, and get humble. And now I feel like, you know, where I had doubt and hopelessness earlier today during the day, now I have hope and compassion for myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was reflecting in the subway the way I was feeling about myself, and it was coming off through in other people. And when I walk around with peace in my heart, that's what I absolutely get back. So. Thank you all for being here and listening.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that the meditation was about a thought come, a sound comes and goes away. A thought, it's only a thought. Like last week when I was going crazy, I was like, okay, it's a thought. It's like, you can't do anything right. Oh, interesting, that's a thought. You know, if you make it a thought instead of who you are, it does help. It sounds a little crazy, but it does help. Helps me.
But you have to train yourself to be able to do that. Anybody else? Really?
Yay. Hi, my name's Laurel. I love so many things both of you said tonight, and two little things is you had challenged us to just spend a half an hour not saying I, me, or mine. Right. And it made me think right away, I came with a friend who commented to me, oh, said blah, 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 also come here too, right? And I said, yes, that's because I told them about it. And he was like, oh, of course you did. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't, I mean, everything just revolves around myself. So that was a good check. I'm going to try that. And also something was said that maybe we don't really have as much free will as we think we do, mm-hmm. and that we're leading our lives without being conscious of what we're doing, and just falling back on habits and patterns, and that really stands out to me. Because I think there's so much truth in that, so I'm going to really take that home tonight and think about it a lot going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
Hi, my name is Hillary. I just wanted to kind of...
Can you hold the mic closer?
Sure.
Thank you.
On the same theme, I was experiencing this evening during the meditation part, and this kind of feeling of, like, you know, my mind being very clear, but the karmic parts of being still just being there, you know, and it's in that same theme of not I, me, mine, because it's okay, it's not my fault. It's like I kind of felt my particular flavor, the particular flavor of judgment that I experience on a regular basis, it, you know, is like, whatever it is, it's my fault, you know. And it's like I just got to experience this. Oh, this is just what's there. This whatever's left, you know, whatever. When the mind is gone, things are very calm. And oh, okay, there's still this flavor, this form, you know, this person, this karma that's still there, and that's how it is. That's all.
Thank you. I like that phrase, the flavor, the particular flavor of judgment. Yeah, we all have our own special flavors. But if we see that no matter what the flavor is, it's judgment. Yeah.
Yeah, when you get the flavor, then you get to say, oh yeah, that's just judgment.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And then one thing I find helpful, if it feels strong, is to ask, what am I feeling inside? Because very often when there's a strong judgment or there's something deeper inside, there's something that wants to be seen or known or heard. And it's sometimes good to just ask in there, what's going on? Just as an extra little something.
Thanks.
And the word karma came up, and in my group we were talking about people, like, yeah, you go over there, they believe in reincarnation. And it's funny because this is a Buddhist center, and clearly that's what many Buddhists believe, millions. For me, a much more immediate and obvious experience is that what I do now is going to impact who I am in a minute. And who I am now is a result of a cause and condition that happened before this minute. So that it's very immediate. It's not, yes, indeed, you know, it could be about a future life, but it's most often about a future minute in my mind at this point. Because I do like only feel like I can only share my own experience, and I don't have any experience of past lives, so I don't talk about that. And it's not necessary. It's the things that we talk about here are very much about how to live in the moment, how to do what's going on right now. And you can come here, and there are teachers, if you pay attention who's coming, who can take you way someplace. And it's fabulous if you're interested in going, but it's not necessary. You can find your peace. But clearly, whoever who said they came here because they were curious, and I said, that's a wonderful thing. It's about investigation and curiosity. It's a wonderful thing. There's so much to learn. So much to learn.
I think that's interesting because once you stop being curious, you stop learning, and everything starts to shut and get stale in a way. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Diana. I just want to say I really have enjoyed this evening so far. I've just had an incredible experience. I've just come from a large gathering where there were 1,600 people meditating, and I am still, this was last week, overwhelmed by the strength of the spiritual realm. It still is within me. It was just an incredible experience, and in the subsequent days since Tuesday, I've had all of the really awful things have been happening to me, and I am not. I'm accepting, and I understand. And people are shooting cannons at me, essentially. And I don't send hate back. And it's just unbelievable that I am not just into this whole thing, because what they are doing to me is just incredible. So all I can say is it's because of a spiritual awareness. Mm. And I was driving into work very early this morning. The traffic was horrific, and everybody's sitting in line, and then of course people are getting into, you know, merging and things. And you know, I was just okay. I'll get there. And somebody stopped and let me in, right? And then I realized, you know, sure, there are people that have their issues and that want to make other people hurt and send out bad karma. But there are lots of good people in the world. And, you know, just try to find them and be a good person myself. That's really the only thing I can do, is be a good person myself. And I'm just very grateful that I've found the program. And it's been an incredible, incredible journey. And I'm just still overwhelmed by the strength of the spirituality of people. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. As each person shares, it's so wonderful for me because I feel like I'm hearing the Dharma. I'm hearing the teachings, and that's why I think this sharing is so important, because teachings and how this works doesn't have to come from sitting here, somebody sitting here. We all have it within us, something to share that can be helpful for somebody else. And that's why I really love this time when people share. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Sandra and Angela. When I hear the Dhamma, I get, it just keeps like adding up, like putting money in the bank,
mm-hmm.
You know. And I realize that daily, and it's not daily when I sit, I could be a lot more grateful. So when I'm grateful, I'm more grounded, and I'm not in fear. And I mean, this practice to me is like, it's a gift. It's just a gift. And so hearing, you know, other people share and hearing you guys, it's just like it just keeps, you know, putting money in the bank. And I feel like I'm more pleasant in this world, you know? I mean, in the trains, I dodge people. I don't want to go in those places. I don't want to get people pissed off either, you know? But yeah, my work, I can feel it in my work. You know, I just asked to be present and to do the best that I could do. So, and it's all this practice, you know, just sitting with myself. I could be in my skin. That's like an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks again.
Thank you. We have time for one more share.
Hi. My name is Franny. I'm very, very excited to be here. This is my third time. And there's a certain calmness and peace that I get from Sandra's voice. The tone of your voice is just very soothing to me. And today, this gesture that you made touched me, because I have to feel it. Sometimes I don't believe what I'm feeling spiritually. I have to reach out and touch it. I just wanted to tell you that this is the third time I meditated here. And I thought at first I fell asleep the first time. And then the second time it happened, it's just such a serene feeling of having no chatter going on.
Wow.
And no impending chatter coming from this end up. Like, there's always stuff happening up here. And sometimes there's something rising, and I'm not too sure what that's all about, but I know there's something. So to sit for how many minutes we sat, and that I had none of that chatter or impending feelings, was just marvelous. And my foursome here that we shared, you know, I the third step and the seventh step prayer, of course, but so many pointers to go forward, to take out of here. I'm just very excited to be here, and tomorrow I start, not just that, I do in the morning find time for prayer, but I haven't been so dedicated to find a few moments to quiet myself, to really feel, and invite, you know, peace into my heart. What a concept. And I don't mean disrespect, I'm excited. I thank my friend Laura, who started by mentioning this place, and Cindy, who is my galloping white knight, who, let's get in the chariot and get here, and for you guys.
Thank you.
You touched me. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, here's to peace in the heart. And we're going to close with a loving kindness meditation. No, go ahead. And maybe just a few minutes, and let it go in, because it can deepen and deepen. And just a reminder again before you leave that whatever you give to the center is so appreciated by the two of us, by the center itself. Without the donations of the people who come, we would not be able to have this place. It's as simple as that. So thank you.
So we've actually talked a lot about metta today. And it's not a prayer particularly, but it's an opening of your heart. The peace and serenity, the power actually that we've generated here with our practice has given us merit. There's merit in this room. And may this merit spread out and touch all of us, each of us. May we wish merit on, wish happiness. May we all be happy. And then the spread of the ripples out as if dropping a stone in a pond. To all the people we know, and call it we, may we all be happy. And that means the ones you love, the family, the loved ones, the ones you work with, the ones you live near, and the difficult ones that you know, all the we's, all the lives you touch, they want to be happy like you want to be happy. May you be happy and safe. May you be healthy. May you meet loving kindness, and may you give loving kindness. May all of us be happy. May all of us be free. Now let the ripple extend to the you, those that we don't know, maybe the people that we see on the train, maybe the people that we read about. And that's a little harder. Those are some of the people we might love at a distance, and some of the people that we border on hating at a distance. As I said before, it's not because they deserve it, it's because our hearts need to open. So not only may we be happy, but may you all be happy. You want to be happy like we want to be happy. May you be happy and healthy, safe and protected. May you live with ease. And if you're struggling, if there's suffering, may you meet your suffering with tenderness. May my heart quiver with the compassion. And I'm not sitting with your suffering. I'm sitting with the quivering of my heart when faced with other people's suffering. May we all meet loving kindness and compassion. May we be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. Whether you walk or swim or fly. So it's 9 o'clock.
Wow.
We did it.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.